Second to last, we'll have one session tomorrow, and it's great to see new faces. Our broth, something. Last year, was it? Our broth, yeah, I know. I'm trying. So it's wonderful to see you. Unfortunately, we cannot go through the standard question of what did you hear me say in the last, because it would take a long time, so you'll just have to kind of... Debbie as well.
Hi.
Just join in. What I'd like to do is for you to think of the most imaginary, innovative, surprising, evangelistic or discipleship approach that you've ever encountered. So let's just share that briefly before we go through the various forms in Acts. One thing that we gather from Acts is that it's very unpredictable, very creative, very beautiful in some ways. So let's just briefly collect evangelistic or discipleship, kind of any kind of way of testifying to Christ. What have you encountered that was really very unusual, surprising? You didn't expect that as a Scottish person. And can I refer to you as a Chinese person, or would that be not right? Okay, so just whatever background or culture you come from. Germans are surprised by everything because it's just surprising. So anything you think of, just spontaneously. Maybe that was even inspiring.
Can you give us an example, just so we know what kind of categories you're
talking about?
I'm not quite clear.
Any form of testifying to the gospel, any form of evangelism, any form of discipleship that struck you as innovative, interesting, creative, not what you expected?
Crazy? Wacky?
Well, if you have to, but it would be best in the sense of, wow, that would be something to learn to... So we don't want to, you know, yeah.
The cultural problem you're probably having here is evangelism?
Let me start with one. Okay. The Mark Theater. Has anybody heard about that? Mark Theater. So Mark Drama, yeah. I think he's a British guy.
The one that Joe directed.
I was Jesus.
Oh, you were Jesus.
So anyway, I thought, you know, we can always say that's not so good, that's really good. But I thought it was a wonderful approach because we are a more of a narrative society. We like to get into the story. And there are some wonderful stories that are told about that. So you wanted to...
mine was slightly different, but I remember a person here in St. Andrews, Zander, he went along to a football tournament just for the express purpose of trying to meet some students, and one of the students didn't have the right football shoes, so Xander just gave him his shoes, and then they were like, who is this guy who's just come to like give his shoes to that team? And then he ended up playing for them and scored a goal, and then he stayed with that team throughout that whole time at university, and like that, you know, most of them are not Christians. So, like, yeah, it's great.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a great methodology or something, or a program.
I know in Canada, maybe YWAM or some group like that, they would do like surf evangelism or ski evangelism or skateboard evangelism, where they would just, I don't really know how they did it, but I know it involved just getting into sport.
Yes, in the sports themselves, yeah, wonderful. I think you.
There's a friend of mine that's quite good at art, and he would be in the centre of London, and he'd start off and he'd draw something that looked very obscure, and he'd start to draw a crowd, and then it'd turn into maybe a picture of the Good Samaritan or something related to a parable or a Bible story, and then just get 5 minutes on what this page is about.
Good.
With me, I can just remember my daughter Michelle, and many of you know, she went up a hill with her youth leader, and they all went up this sort of mountain in their pajamas. Huh. There was great courage to say, we have fun as Christians.
Phew! Good.
The Les Miserables, the book made me transform into a film in its very different forms. I mean, I guess it's more familiar to some people, but it's just as a story. It's a very popular, but also still beautiful and rich story, I guess, about the gospel and about transformation and grace.
So there would be a whole wonderful literary world, including C.S. Lewis and some of the writers that come from the British arts, and then Dostoevsky in some ways. Yeah. So it's a rich world right there. And
very I have friends in Canada who would go to like New Age fairs, psychic fairs, and they would like have a table where they would offer prayer and ministry. Actually, lots of people would come to them.
In fact, I think that idea, and I'm too chicken on that, but to be open to pray for somebody. I actually wanted to pray for your friend who went in his swimsuit out with me.
Yeah.
And I regret that, you know. Just, I mean, I don't know if he would have been willing to, but I just thought, wow, I could have prayed for his endeavor in doing his coffee work. So I think there I want to be a little bit more flexible and just, would you be opposed for me to pray for you, you know? So I'm not trying to talk us into evangelistic approaches, so that was just kind of my sense. So anything else that you have encountered that was really creative or...
We used to, in Hungary, they used solarium a lot, which I think is Campus Crusade, but it's...
I was trying to remember the name of it.
Yeah. A what?
So basically the idea is you have pictures of different things and you can use different questions to make people connect. So for example, a question about what do you think represents your life? Uh-huh. What would you like your life to be like?
I see.
What do you think is, which picture represents God? Mm-hmm. And then through that you can get into quite deep discussions. So we just used to take the solarium packet.
Good. And what is it called?
Solarium.
Solarium. Like, okay. Uh-huh. Good. Yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. We had one student who offered free tours in the St. Louis Museum. We would just go through the museum with people and say, you know, what's going on here, a little similar. Okay, anything else?
Did they know anything about it, or did they just make it up?
Pardon?
Did they know anything about the exhibits?
He did. He was really deeply into arts.
Similar to that would be the,
yeah, he did.
The Christian Heritage Tours in Cambridge.
Yes.
They take these walking tours around... around various historical sites in Cambridge. I mean, St. Andrews is ripe for this.
Uh-huh.
And they talk about how the gospel has shaped the history of not just Cambridge, but in fact, a lot of Western culture.
Yeah, and it's not forced. And there are hundreds and hundreds of tourists who go through these tours. Mm-hmm. They arrive in Cambridge and they look for something to do. Happen upon that. That's good. Okay, I think this is a wonderful start. Where's my little thing? Just briefly, we're going to look at that in the book of Acts. I know we don't have a lot of time, and I also want to talk really fast before Mark dozes off like he did last night, so I'm going to try and really get to that fast. So here are the major forms that we can see in the book of Acts, and I think that's very interesting. If you come from a certain culture, maybe Scottish, English, German, Chinese, to go through that and say, what's familiar, what is not familiar to my culture. And I feel like this is a sample in the book of Acts. This is not, you've got to stay within those, and otherwise you're leaving forms. But you see here, the personal conversation. I'm sorry about this. This is really annoying, but I've done a lot of copy editing in the last in the last months, and you just train your eye and you say, "Oh man, this is really bad. It's gonna be does a number on you." Okay, so household gatherings. I think we are experiencing something about that right now. This would be a Greco-Roman domus, what we are involved with here, except grandma and grandpa and some cousins. Oh, yeah, Grandpa here. Grandma and Grandpa would be here too, and some aunts and some people who work in the land. So the household, the oikos, that's a big sociological phenomenon. And in our fragmented world, where in Germany 50% of people live in single households, it's hard to represent domus. You know, you walk into your apartment, you pay for it, you have your job, you're alone. So there's a lot going on here that fits to this household gathering. And if you study oikos in the Greco-Roman world, also in the Jewish world, but particularly in the Greco-Roman world, lots of poetry going on, terrible sexual immorality, climbing the ladder of social things. So there are all kinds of bad and good things about it. But I am convinced that the oikos sociology was very instrumental to the spread of the gospel, where maybe a lady of the house who had great connections and was very much the one who would put people together in Rome or some other big city, and you know, this important person needs to meet that important person, that was at least in some circles Christianized, that whole approach of come together. I wonder if the Cornelius household would be something like that, so it wasn't just the family. So we could dig here for a long time and see, wow, that's a structure that's there, and that would have been used. Public speeches and sermons, it's a very interesting thing to go through the various forms of speeches, the various contexts, the various addressees, and how these sermons and speeches change what is constant and what is adapted. So there's a lot of interesting work to be done in that area. Public hearings and formal trials. who mentioned that recently in a conversation? Things are kind of flowing together in my head. But it is very interesting that I think, for instance, Paul appeals to Roman law and appeals to the emperor, Caesar, and says, you know, we're not going to walk out here just so incognito. I'm a Roman citizen. You could give that whole thing a spin of, well, he does trust God, but he really wants the law to function well in Rome, etc., and he wants to appeal to that and live under that. I wonder if Paul does a little bit of what we read in Romans 13, and that is, hold the civil government accountable to its God-given purposes. So a little bit of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, that the civil government is the church is the conscience of the civil government. And so you want to dismiss me? I'm a Roman citizen? Let's make that public, please. So these kinds of things, rather than a self-protection motif or motive. Plus, I wonder if Paul also has a sense of wherever God takes me, even in courtrooms, I want to be his witness. So rather than to preserve himself, an application of last night's dying to self in a healthy way, letting go. And I've met people like that. They're not self-abusive. They don't have a martyrdom complex, but they accepted the fact that they were put on trial, that they were under investigation, that they were in prison as part of their witness journey.
That is a reality that I'm encountering a lot with the people that I'm working with in Iran, leaders who are constantly being arrested and being put into public hearings or formal trials, and using that as an opportunity to witness. And so seeing, you know, seeing our judges coming to faith through their witness.
I think that's wonderful.
Some of these things are things that
yes. Yeah. No, I think that's very, very significant. I see that in Ukraine. When I started going there in 1998, there were still many people who had suffered under Soviet communism, and they would tell these similar stories, you know. And some of them, you have to know them personally to know it's genuine. It's not a martyrdom complex. They're not thinking that we're all kind of wishy-washy and they're the real thing. It's not that, but they are, in a sense, serving God gladly, and they find themselves in situations that you couldn't knock and say, could I please give you the gospel? No way. No way. Get there. Okay. Dialogues and debates. That's a very interesting thing. I've been for a while involved in Muslim-Christian dialogues and debates, and I have left that. But that's my own personal story. I just felt like I need to befriend these Muslims rather than to have a public debate. So with one of them, Suzanne and I visited him and his wife in Chicago. You know, we had some debates at SLU in St. Louis. And it was so much better to be in their home and sit around a little table without chairs. And I would just say, you know, look at the redemptive history of God's work in the Old and New Testament. Show me that from Quran. And so that we were not fighting with each other. We were just saying, look, what's there? And they were very interested whether we were married for love or not. So there were these kinds of things. So I'm a little bit hesitant, especially when you have to win debates and that kind of thing. But, you know, the house of Tyrannus that Paul went to, he did not shy away from proclaiming the gospel, and most likely, sociologically, he used that place in Ephesus to evangelize Asia Minor. You know, all the hinterland churches that he had never visited, like the Colossian church, probably started this way, that some merchant or somebody who didn't have anything to do went to the house of Tyrannus, heard Paul, came to faith, went back. So there's a lot of ferment here. And then an appearance to Paul of the risen Christ, we would all like to have that. There are some unique things, an earthquake, if you read that. And then also, it is curious, John Lennox mentioned that in the ELF talks, that sometimes the Holy Spirit hinders to go somewhere. So we shouldn't think that, and you and I have talked about that just a little bit, we touched on that, we shouldn't think that wherever we go, whatever we do, there's going to be an open door. And obviously this word hindrance is kolutos. So what I started out with in Acts, akolutos, the alpha privativum, that it was the gospel went through unhindered. Well, here is the hindrance. So sometimes we hit walls, sometimes we do not see the fiber and the perspective of God, and so we can't move forward. So that's an important thing as well. So I just wanted to mention that, and I just want to encourage us to be creative, be imaginative, see what kind of ways God would use. I think John Lennox has a lot of wonderful stories of how he got into the post-Soviet system. Oz Guinness also has some interesting stories in that way. So sometimes God gives you an opportunity, like we got to be in Iran and be with one of the vice presidents of the former regime in Iran, and talk with him and his wife. And Mohammed Abtahi actually visited us at Covenant Seminary. He came and visited us. We went to a restaurant together, and then he was imprisoned later on. So, anyway, so there are some unusual things when we move in this area of external growth. But you see, if you want to be out of trouble, if you want to have a predictable life, don't get involved in God's work. Because what's the consequence of this? A increasingly heterogeneous group of hospice people, broken people, that bring all the junk of the effects of the fall into the church. And so what do you have? Well, you have Okay, well, I need to go a little slower. You have internal problems. So here you see this expanding growth. There's all kinds of things happening in terms of internal and external growth. That's what we've looked at this morning. And I'm going to skip through some of these slides to get to the internal tensions, internal divisions, and external opposition. And that's supposed to help us to expect difficulties and problems. So if you move outward, if you are well-bound, if you follow the mission of breaking through barriers, you collect all kinds of problems, because you may even have Germans in your fellowships here, and we have two. That's a lot, you know. Poor Scottish people, you know. But you are such a pleasant person.
You only have German,
and you're so pleasant and so kind. So I think you don't even count as a German Christian in that bad sense. Okay, so let's go a little fast here. So growth amidst external opposition and internal tension. We're looking at discipleship, so we're taking a particular slice of the book of Acts. And my argument is that growth in the call to be disciples and to make disciples happens, the internal growth, the maturing, and the external growth in the midst, sometimes because of, sometimes despite of, in the midst of external opposition, internal tension. God uses our whole life to grow us. And that's my encouragement to you, not to leave anything out of your life right now. Family, relationships, friendships, challenging church situation, your own doubts, your own questions. Don't leave anything out of this X of internal, external growth despite external opposition and internal tension. I must come to the place of believing that God sees, that God knows. And if He sees and knows, if this is not just a little trip, and that we just kind of make up something transcendent, but really we should all be busy getting a good life here and then kicking the bucket and then it's all over. Since that is true, I need to come to the place of saying, God knows. He says He's doing that. So why should I be excluding certain areas? So we're going to look at external opposition, internal tension. And this is overwhelming. You will feel overwhelmed. We'll feel like there's no hope. And that's precisely what you need to get. The early Christian faced an incredible uphill struggle. If we would just go into the one area of proclaiming Jesus as Lord, it is absolutely suicidal to do that. In the Greco-Roman world, in the Jewish world, precisely that's where they're going. So here we go. I'll give you the whole thing. In one thing, there are political, economic, religious, satanic, cultural, legal, philosophical, and nature-related oppositions. So, you are called to discipleship. We are called to discipleship. We see internal growth. We're encouraged by some of these things. We see the opportunities of going into the house of Tyrannus, etc., etc. And what happens? There are walls that we hit off. Political, economic, religious, satanic, cultural, legal, philosophical, and nature-related kind. What does that mean? Well, right now I can tell you that the Christians in the United States, many Christians, are dumbfounded, absolutely dumbfounded. At least those who are sensitive to saying, how did a leader like that get into the White House? We have such a high view of the president. And I've always felt, as I've lived in the United States, that office was too exalted somehow. You know, from my background of abuse of a democratically elected Hitler, I just can't handle that. He needs to go to Parliament and defend his policies every day. So I just feel like there should be a parliamentarian kind of a thing in terms of the executive power of the President of the United States. So there's a huge thing going on right now of having been perhaps too cushy, too connected with, etc. And that has huge ramifications and divisions between white evangelical Christians and African American evangelical Christians, because they're solidly divided. And I, as a German, as an immigrant, I hear from both sides. You know, I can play a little dumb and just hear and kind of gather. But political opposition, you know, we have a long history for the people of Israel and then the people of God after Pentecost in terms of political structures seeking to oppose this gospel. And you know enough for me simply to hint at that and to say these are formidable forces. I mean, the concerted effort of Soviet communism or Chinese Mao Zedong, incredible how hard that was to persist and to live under it. I had a very curious time one time in Ukraine. In the early stages, I was in a hall that was kind of a communist lecture hall. Just, you know, run-down chairs and all very bombastic in terms of concrete, etc. And Lenin, a Lenin statue, was in the corner there. So here we were 50 pastors from all over Ukraine, and we were looking at the gospel and the power of the gospel, etc. And so we said, Lenin was really a bad guy. He has to face the corner. That's what we do with children, or what they did with children that were bad in school. And so we turned the statue around, and he had to listen to us speaking about the gospel, you know, the stone statue. And the gospel is alive and well. And there was such joy, there was such jubilation in that group of, can you believe it? 70 years of communism based on the structure of Karl Marx and Lenin and Stalin. It is finished, and there's still the life of the gospel. You know, it was kind of a symbolic catharsis for these people whose fathers and mothers and relatives had suffered immensely under that. So, anyway, economic problems and issues. We are saying that the call to discipleship reaches into all areas of life. But by golly, the economic world, it's a real challenge to go into that. If you are in a certain area and you are resisting corruption, you are walking a line of serving the living God. And then this is particularly depressing here because there are all kinds of things going on concerning the person of Jesus, and we could spend hours. Why it is unwise to say Jesus is Lord. Why it is suicidal in the Greco-Roman world and in the Jewish world. So the person of Jesus, if you would just stop talking about Jesus, if you just have a general sense of the transcendent and a kind of a fuzzy sense of God is still good, so many problems would be solved, quote-unquote. Religious spiritual confusion concerning the law, circumcision, and the temple. There's a lot going on in that. You are leading us away from Moses. You're leading us away from the temple. So there's a lot of inner Jewish question going on here. And then surprisingly, jealousy. But not surprisingly, if you see how hard the Jews worked for maybe 300 years before Christ. Not so much in reaching the Gentiles, but in establishing synagogues all over the diaspora world. So I'm distinguishing that a little bit. But that was hard work. Hard work to be somewhere and to have more than 10 men and to establish a synagogue. Why jealousy? Because this wildfire of Christian faith goes from synagogue to synagogue, and in all kinds of places, people become Messianic Jews. They turn to Christ. So we've worked for 300 years setting up this. and then this wildfire comes by that we as Jews consider blasphemous, and this false teaching just kind of takes off. So from that perspective, jealousy is understandable. And then various disputes. And this is something that I need to be open to and careful about. The presence of oppression, the presence of satanic power. I told you about that dream that I had working with these guys in Seattle. And I didn't tell you that the pastor approached the cobra, took it by the neck, and it spat out the venom. Squeezed the neck and spat out the venom. It didn't hurt anybody. And the assistant pastor, I'm not quite sure whether I dreamt about the assistant pastor, but I'm nearly sure. He just took the snake and was able to subdue it. And I have no idea. These guys all looked so nice. We're all men. You know, it's a men's retreat. Just very, very nice Seattleites. What was going on there? Why did I have that dream? Why did I have that dream before I was speaking to them so I would be just a little bit more alert? This is not a neutral world we're in. There's stuff going on. So I don't know. I'll just share that with you. But we have to be vigilant. I don't think we should suspect a demon behind every bush, but also not be naive about that power, even if it's so crazy in this modern naturalistic world to think that there are some evil things. But those who have been involved with drugs, with alcohol, with mind-altering substances, they know that there is a correspondence between evil and that. Often they come together. So it's a big world here, and the followers of Christ, you know, that's where we come home to this sovereignty of Christ. The followers of Christ don't only have the atoning love and sacrifice of Christ, but we read in the Great Commission that to him was given power over every power, so that when you are confronted with a power that is greater than you are serving, you are in union with a power that is greater than that. And that is our hope. And I think as I'm getting older, I'm getting a little more fickle. I have a little more fear. As a younger person, I was invincible. I actually begin to appreciate the protective power of Christ, not only the atoning love of Christ, which I always or have long welcomed. So as you get older, as you see your natural strengths and defenses waning, the power, the exousia of Christ will become very significant to you. And obviously this is a big theme in the New Testament, that we serve the Lord of Lords. So lots of stuff going on here, cultural, legal. We could linger on that, go through the book of Acts. And what I'm saying here is all of this are good things that God created that went wrong. There are powers behind here that are actually good. I'm convinced God has set civil government for a particular purpose, at least for a particular time, and etc. as you go through this. But because of the fall, these cultural legal structures, for instance, oppose the gospel. And then some Christians deduce, therefore, cultural legal things are the world. And we have to be very careful on that, how we describe the world. So that would be another 2 or 3 hour, at least. And I have to do that a lot in Ukraine, because these are post-Soviet generation people for whom everything except prayer, confession, preaching, and fellowship is the world. And right now, there are lawyers, there are doctors, there are scientists coming to faith, and they are not welcome in these churches, because what can we do with a lawyer? I mean, you guys are from the world. Get rid of your law, you know. I mean, I had a nuclear physicist sitting in that class, and unfortunately also some KGB agents that we know now were also there. But that's a real challenge if you are ghettoized and you're not ready to say, wow, Ukrainian lawyers of a corrupt nation, you know, there's a good bit of correspondence between Brazil and Ukraine, they are coming to Christ. What will happen to the law sphere there? And then philosophical issues. It is absolutely fabulous to trace what Paul does in the Areopagus, addressing Stoics, Epicureans, the polytheists, what he does with point of connection and difference, point of connection and difference, distance. So I am convinced, and I think one of you encouraged me with that graph of the arrow coming down, Christ coming down in the lower box, that is not a graph that says, therefore, we will reject philosophy. Therefore, we abandon the whole philosophical endeavor. It is just like in all the other eras, it's moving from an anthropocentric to a theocentric starting point in looking at philosophy, in looking, in this case, at philosophical systems at the time of the New Testament. We could spend several hours on Stoicism and its connection with or similarity with Pharisaic Judaism. So anyway, and then nature, that's an interesting question, how natural disasters should be viewed. So we have to think very carefully about that as well. So this is forms of external opposition. We could probably add another 20 or 30. So be prepared for the rest of your life let us be prepared for the rest of our lives to anticipate that as we mature, as we put down roots, as we become more worldwide, deeply rooted, dying to self-controlling self kind of witnesses, individual and corporately, that there will be formidable forces against us. Now, we should never mistake our own stupidity and say, look, Satan, look, the world, etc. So Peter guards against that. You know, don't justify your own stupidity and say, yeah, the world is really hard, it's against me. So we have to be very careful. So anyway, here you see the whole thing. This is external thrust of the coming of the incarnation of Christ, the dynamic movement, and the thrust outward. And my time is nearly up, so I'm just going to go briefly into the internal oppositions. Yeah. Well, anyway, these are some responses to external opposition. That's pretty lame, isn't it? Singing and rejoicing in the face of all these powers, but maybe not. Wow. Oh, man. To sing in the jail? So we have to really rethink what is our response, because the world's response is there's opposition, we need to battle back. So letting God remain great in the midst of problems, wow, preach to yourself, Hans. Preaching, lecturing, willingness to suffer, exorcism and healing, exhortation with a temporary curse, asking for a public apology, engaging contemporary thought. It's really rich because you're living from the victory. You're not a triumphalist. You don't know everything, but you can be confident in God's provision. So it's akolutos, it's unhindered. But it's enormous battle. So anyway, so let's see what else we can do here. Forms of internal tension. Can you still handle some more stuff that will battle against you, against us? There's the whole thing. Okay. So this is a seemingly a problem for us, but it doesn't seem to be a problem for Peter. It's very interesting, the physical departure of Jesus, replacement of Judas is kind of a little bit under that. So, what are the ongoing challenges, at least in the book of Acts, diversity of background? So, I'm saying, if you want to have peace and quiet, do not become heterogeneous and move out and break through barriers. Keep it male, white, middle class, a certain income, ties, pretty families, no problems, at least in church for an hour, etc. Keep it there and don't rock the boat.
Amen.
See? We had Big Lena. She was a pastor in Ukraine. She would fill a whole door here coming in, Big Lena. And she went through a town in Ukraine. She was a wonderful babushka. Listen to this. She went through, she wanted men pastors to lead something. She went into her town and she said, you know, I have hundreds of connections with hundreds of prostitutes and hundreds of drug addicts. Would you please help? And nobody wanted to get involved with that, so she ended up as a pastor. And half of her church were recovering prostitutes and the other half were recovering alcoholics. And they were full of the Spirit and alive. And she would come to our school. And when she was done, she would come back again and take the courses again. So that was Big Liana. So diversity of background, you know, big time. But beautiful, just how... And she was the only one in her church that brought donations for our little seminary. The other ones, that was... But she made sure she would bring 200, 300 hryvnia. You don't even want to figure out how much that is in pounds. You don't. Just want to say, 300 hryvnia. They brought that. They collected that as a donation. So anyway, so there are some beautiful things when that diversity comes together. But anyway, new converts with increasing diversity. So if we are countercultural, if we're counter breaking through the barriers of this civilized world, we're going to have all kinds of problems. Different ethnic and cultural heritage, conversion of a former enemy. That's a curious thing that we need to pray for some of our hardest enemies, because they may become our co-laborers someday. I've had a few of those experiences. Human depravity and impurity. Here again, we come to the hard issues. Excuse me. Not yet confessed sins, so there's some progressive sanctification and the need to come clean. Religious convictions, different religious views, deficient doctrines, physical ailments and sickness, and then different approaches to ministry. Barnabas and Paul, we have to study that very carefully. When should we split and it's okay? And when is splitting the triumph of the adversary and enemy? I've had both in my life. Some of it is haunting me and some of it I think is right. But as a leader, you're bound to have to go separate paths. And it's really hard. So we have to study that. So what is this? What is going on with internal tensions? Well, you're surrounded by that. Think of the other graph I have, the external oppositions, and then add this. I couldn't get one circle to be encircled like that. But you just feel like... give me a break. Give me some relief. Got some release. And yet, the akolutos, the unhindered point, is all the more encouraging because that's what they were up against. And we are in a similar place. And I am, for one, not a triumphalist. I don't want to brag about what I've done or what we can do. But to say God will be victorious, God will pursue his way, and it may cost some of our lives, Stephen was stoned, that's a beautiful thing. But it's so nitty-gritty, it's so historically real. And so you see it here. And so as we grow, you know, we've lingered here quite a bit. For us to see that we are caught up in this mission of God, and moral purity is not only a matter of own personal walk. It's for us as a community. Briefly, how did they respond? Interestingly, very similar to what we have had. And then I'm going to stop, David. Prayer, engaging in the ministry of the word, confessing past evil practices, bridge building, Barnabas, gentle instruction, electing leaders, godly leaders, call a council, going separate ways in non-essentials. If you talked to Lenin about this, or Mao Zedong, or some Hitler, these would be all wishy-washy, weak little things. Hitler despised pastors. There are some really nasty things he said about these spineless marshmallows that just have this loving, weak, Jewish Jesus. We want to have German Christians who have a spine, who are loyal, who fight, etc. So what is this here? And I think in Ukraine particularly, I'm hard-pressed. A few years I went there and they said, why is Obama not bombing? Why is he not sending us military stuff? And I was kind of pressed against the wall. You know, they said, you're from the United States. What is this wishy-washy thing? And we had to wrestle with each other to think about the fact that Crimea had just been taken. And the more I talk about that with people, the more I realize how that was robbing a piece of land. The Donetsk region, I had a student and he had a hole in his nose because he was shot at, and he was just kind of bewildered, and he sat in this class, and here we're talking about this. What do you do? In the back row is a former general of Ukrainian army. He's a pastor now, but he is not a happy camper with, what do we do? Why should we not fight? So the whole question of what is the church, what is the mission of the church in a situation where you're currently being abused, where families are torn apart, where students are bewildered. They went to a school in Donetsk and they can't go there anymore. It's dangerous. So I think there are many pressures being brought to us to deal with, and yet to believe that we are serving God in God's ways. And the way our Master came as the suffering servant, we follow in that. Not as marshmallows, not as doormats. We stand before the living God. If you mess with me, you're messing with the living God. But how do we deal with force? How do we deal with militancy? We're back to the Maccabean question. And I can tell you, I was just so deeply touched that at the end of one of those weeks, one of the guys who was particularly troubled with my teaching came up and said, we wanted you to say that the West should bring us weapons, but you have given us a perspective whereby we can be triumphant in Christ, even though it means suffering, it means pain, and it can mean death to some of us. But we see that that's the long shot, and that's what Putin needs. So anyway, there are hundreds of things, obviously. I'm just touching on very little, but it's just beautiful to see how we get help and encouragement, at least to some degree, in the book of Acts, to see how realistic and how tough, how real, but also how beautiful this endeavor of being called to disciple-making is. And you already have experienced a lot, so I'm preaching to the choir, I know that, but I also hope to encourage us together to walk on the ancient pathways, not to dress our wounds lightly, and to trust that God is doing this internal and this external work in a way that will make some people wonder and say, seems like God is present. And then the battle is won. So, I'm going to stop here.